This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Dogcast Radio. Coming up in this episode in the news...
You've heard of the expression dog days. Well, in today's programme we go one step further with the dog month.
We talked to Delia Graham about the Blue Cross charity.
Just really about getting the message out there that about responsible pet ownership, thinking about the kind of issues that really need consideration before the fluffy pet is brought home.
And does being a dog owner ever give you a panicky, what have I done moment? This is the moment when it dawns on you that you have voluntarily brought into your life a demanding creature who has pressing needs and acknowledges no rules or boundaries. But before all that, we bring you our breed profile. How do you feel about excitable redheads? No, not me. I'm talking about Irish setters. We met some very glamorous individuals and their owners at a dog show. The first dog was a sweet young thing, and as you'll hear, I was taken with him.
Hello. Oh, hello, beautiful. How old?
He's 9 months.
Oh, wow.
Oh, a long way to go, yeah.
Okay. Oh. You've got a long way till you calm down. Hello.
What's it like to live with an Irish setter?
Yes, they're very gentle. They're very very good with children. You've got to have a sense of humour. Yes. But generally, they're very, you know, you get your initial start with people visiting where they go really silly. But 5 minutes later, they're all calm, laying down, ignoring you, you know. And they say they do calm. They do calm down, but they are fun-loving. Mm. And that's in their standards to be, you know, to be that way. Yeah. So, but they're lovely with children. Mm. They're absolutely gorgeous with children. They just love people. They're a real people dog. Mm. So,
It's good. But they're not calm at 9 months, obviously.
Well, no. But I think if you stood around for the next few minutes, he would eventually start ignoring you. But, you know... They're not quite as calm as you probably would get with some breeds, but they
that's
are eventually.
Charm, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's
well,
it.
We have a Labrador, so we.
Yeah, well, they're gun
we
dogs.
Know about
gun
lively,
dogs,
but,
anyway, are generally fun loving, and then say they do love people. And I see he's ignored you now. He's got used to you being around.
The novice's worn off.
Yeah. See, we're calm now. That's it.
Oh, they are beautiful. How much grooming do you have to do?
Not a lot. Mm. I mean, obviously you bath them on a regular basis to show them, and you trim them just a little bit. But generally, they're not hard to keep. Mm. You know, you just brush them through most days. They reputation with the shiny coat is how they come, really. Yeah. It's that lovely colour with that gleam. They are a glamorous dog.
You could take it into the hairdresser, couldn't you? Give me that colour.
I want that colour, yes.
Oh. What about exercise?
They take what you give them. Mm. They take what you give them. You can either walk with them for hours or you can give them 20 minutes.
Yeah,
they take what you give them. They're quite happy.
What's it like to live with an Irish setter?
Really, if you can actually spare the time to, you know, be kind but firm, put the discipline into them in a very kind way. They can be very, very sociable. Very much a people dog.
Mm.
Especially with children.
Mm.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. She's three.
Oh, three. She's
very
calm.
Yes.
Is that just how she is, or is that taken...?
No, that's how she is.
Yeah.
Generally, the males are a bit more headstrong than the bitches, you know. They need a bit more of a firm hand. So it's generally quieter than dogs, the males. Bitches are more quieter than males, generally.
What about some exercise?
Yes, they do need quite a bit of free running when they're adults. Not until, not very much free running until they're about 9 months old.
Yeah.
You know, it's just up till then, controlled exercise on a lead to help the bones develop properly.
That's
and then after that, you can just sort of, as much as you want to do, they will do.
Yeah.
You know, 10 miles a day.
What are they like around the house? Are they an in-your-face kind of breed, or are they... to lounge.
They're very exuberant, but they will. They are happy to lounge. Yes.
Yeah. And do they want their people with them, or are they happy to be?
They are really very much a people dog. They don't really like to be left alone for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, but just with any dog, really, they yeah. you know, they like company.
Yeah.
Preferably two Irish setters together.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, they like other Irish setters, do they?
Yes, they do. Yes.
Yeah. What do they like with other dogs?
Oh, very gentle. Yeah. Very gentle with people and dogs.
Yeah.
Although that they're very, very boisterous, they're not in any way nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes them an ideal family dog.
Yeah.
If the family are prepared to put up with the rough and tumble.
What's it like to live with an Irish setter?
It takes over your life completely. We've got four puppies and... that's all I do now.
Yeah.
I look after the puppies, and they greet me whenever I come in, and it's lovely. And they're very affectionate. They put their arms up around me and give me a kiss and lick my face off and clean my husband's face every time he goes near them.
So are they four puppies you've bred, or you...
No, we originally wanted just a pet, and we ended up with four puppies, two little bitches and two dogs.
Yeah.
But we couldn't resist it.
Oh.
No, we didn't think we'd get one at all. And then suddenly we were offered more and thought, oh, well, we may as well have a second one to keep company. And then we were offered a third one and thought, oh, well, we may as well go for that.
And are they all the same age?
Yes, within a month.
Oh, good grief.
It's like four toddlers.
Yes.
Really is. And they make as much mess as toddlers as well, because I keep having to give them boxes that they can tear up. So, you know, I clean up about three or four times every night. But it's worth it. You know, you may as well... It's worth it. The clearing up is worth the time that they spend tearing them up.
Yes, I remember giving our Labrador a box to tear. Do you remember?
Peace.
Yeah. And so, with four of them, I mean, are you walking all day long?
In the evenings, yes, because we've found that we've got a forest, which is great when the weather's good, but when it gets dark, obviously, you just lose them. So in the evenings, I've been taking them out one by one for half an hour each.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you take them all out, if you take two out, they just pull against each other and they're naughty and all the rest of it. So, yes, it's quite time-consuming, to be honest.
And what about training a recall?
I've left that to my husband, who tells me he knows everything about dogs, because I've never had a dog before, ever. I always had cats. And the recall doesn't seem to be working very well. That's why, you know, I said I would take them out on the lead, because it was good for them, good for their muscles anyway.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I wouldn't trust myself. And again, we had to break the cycle, because we were going into the forest and they were coming back and then they stopped coming back. So we were breaking the cycle and we'll start it up again. But, you know, we'll get there. We'll have to.
And how, he or she?
This is he. This is a he.
How old?
He's 9 months.
Oh, hello, gorgeous. Yeah.
This is Miller.
Miller, oh.
But today he got spooked. You know, he went into the ring. Somebody else shows him for me, because I've only been doing this, you know, for a few months.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy trotting around. But, you know, if I want to get anywhere, you know, then somebody with a bit more experience really needs to show him. But he was doing well. And then suddenly he saw one of the stewards with spiky blonde hair. Very attractive, I say. And he immediately stopped and lay down and wouldn't move. So, you know, but that's the first time that's happened. Yeah. But, you know, it's just one of those things.
It's a lot to take in, though, isn't it? You know, it's a lot of other dogs, a lot of people, a lot of smells, noise and movement, isn't it?
Yes, and that's just the dog. I mean, it's for me as well. I mean, I get the dog papers now on Thursdays, and it's like, you know, it's like school friend or Judy or something coming through the door. I open them and read them from cover to cover, trying to find out what's going on. And it's just another world.
Yeah,
And it's great.
Yes.
You know, it's a real interest for my husband and I. You know, it's something to really share. Well, we have to now, because that's all we do. The weekends. Yes. Food shopping, everything else fits in around the dogs. But it's good, you know. Because I was on... When my children left, it was lovely. I could do all the things that I thought I'd want to do. And then it got terribly boring.
Mm.
And now it isn't boring anymore. It's like
four
having four babies. Four babies.
What's it like to live with an Irish setter?
Can be manic. Has its good points and its bad points, like anything else, but no, they're a joy to have, a real joy to have.
How many have you got?
We've got three. We've only got one with us today, like, but we've two at home, two boys at home, and we've brought the bitch with us today. So they're laid back, they're very friendly. They wouldn't harm a fly, really wouldn't. You know, the big softies, you only have to look at her, the way she's leaning and looking and that. She's, you know, they really are good companions, really good.
Very loyal. The thing about an Irish setter as well, if you were to talk to anyone with an Irish, you'd probably find it leaning against you all the time. Contact is very important, either with other dogs or, you know, next to a person. They never really just like to be on their own without, like, pawing at you or leaning on you. And even at home, and we've got two boys and a bitch, and we have a bed for each of them. 9 times out of 10, they'll all be crammed in the same bed. And absolutely inseparable. But they are very loving, very loyal, and each has its own character as well. I mean, we've got one, she's fairly little, but it depends on the breed, you see, which, you know, if you've got one from a breed that is quite placid or whatever, you can get some that are absolutely hyper. But it all depends, they're all different. We're quite lucky, we've got her, she's moderate, she can be a bit hyper, she can be, and we've got another one at home who is just totally so placid, who will actually more or less fall asleep in the ring. And then as soon as 1 minute, and then he's bouncing about all over the place. But they have a very, very nice dog, and a very nice dog to, you know, they're an eye-catching breed as well. Especially if you see, I mean, we're probably in a minority with three. I mean, I know some people who've got 12, 14 Irish setters. Oh, yes. Yeah, we're a very minority. But to see them coming down, you know, somebody with, say, three in one hand on a lead, to see them walking towards you is just, they're so eye-catching. If you want to purse, get an Irish setter.
What about training a recall?
Oh yeah, it's basically a long training lead. You let them off, call them back and pull them back, and as they get used to you know calling them and pulling on the lead, and they'll come back to you, and then after a while you know you can let them go. But I think it's easier once you've trained your first one, the others tend to follow the older one,
and so if you get the first one right,
yeah, and then the rest of them, you know, follow. But she, and it, apart from that, yeah, there's no real bother. Oh, we don't seem to have had anywhere.
No, we've never had one run away as yet. Yeah. We've probably been lucky.
What's it like to live with an Irish setter?
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yes.
Marvellous.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Better still to live with half a dozen.
And they're better. And they're better with more than one.
Yes. Mm. They're better with more than one.
Why is that?
They like company. Yeah. They're very much people dog. So that if they're not with a person, they need to be with another Irish setter. They don't do very well.
Being on their own.
Yeah, so they don't do very well on their own, do they?
No.
And what do they like, you know, so when you're just around the house with you, what do they like? Do they just lounge, or do they want to be with you, or what?
Some do, some don't. It depends on the individual nature. Mm.
But I think basically they're an easy dog to have in the house. They're very good with children. Provided they're trained well when they're young, they're absolutely no trouble at all.
Yeah.
You train them like you would kids. You don't let them get away with things that they shouldn't get away with.
I want them on Wednesdays.
And they take to training. I mean, what's the best method to use training them, or
common sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's experience at the end of the day.
I mean, I have a 14-month-old puppy now. She's passed her good companions, the gold,
like you do that, right?
Silver and bronze before she was 12 months old, so they're easily trainable.
Yes, yeah. It's putting the effort in.
Yes,
it
is. Yes, yeah. You put the effort in.
And they can work, they can do working as well. We've had a dog a few years ago, they used to sort of work obedience, and he used to get jumped through fire hoops and all that, scale walls, hurdling, you know, same as you see on demonstrations. Yes. Yeah.
Just what you put into it. You get back what you put into it.
Yeah.
People say that they're not very intelligent, but they suss things out that if you do it once, they say, well, why have I got to do it again and again and again? Do you agree on that?
Yes, I would. I agree. Mm-hmm. And I think a very intelligent dog is very difficult to live with, such as Border Collies, which are very intelligent, and they are devils to live with because they need something for their brain the whole time. Well, the Irish are quite happy to go to sleep. When you're not doing something, they're quite happy to go to sleep, don't you think?
But once they've had their exercise, been fed, then they'll go for a snooze.
They were gorgeous dogs. And if you'd like to see photos of some of the dogs we met, check out the Dogcast website.
Beauty without vanity. Strength without insolence. Courage without ferocity. And all the virtues of man without his vices. part of the epitaph of Boatswain, Lord Byron's Newfoundland.
Hello, this is the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. You've heard of the expression dog days. Well, in today's programme, we go one step further with the dog month.
Then we have dog handlers having to learn a new language.
And from wannabe Dr. Doolittles, we go to another doctor using his skills to help his dog.
But first, we have an appeal on behalf of a dog needing a home.
Back in Britain, in Newcastle, there's a dog in a shelter whose unusual looks are putting off would-be adopters. The Staffordshire Bull Terrier in question has a deformity, usually known as hare lip in humans. It has resulted in the dog effectively appearing to have two noses, and so far no one has offered him a home. According to his carers, Duo has a lovely nature, although he is on the lively side. For anyone in the UK interested in giving Duo a loving long-term home, there's a contact number on the Dogcast site.
June is a good month for dogs this year. In the UK, it has been the third national microchipping month. The Kennel Club is promoting the importance of microchipping your pet as a permanent method of identification, which will make it easier for your dog to be reunited with you should he be lost or stolen. As the number of dogs stolen increases, the message is that a microchip will make it more likely that your dog will be returned to you.
Meanwhile, in America, June 23rd was the 8th annual Take Your Dog to Work Day. The aim of the day is obviously to have fun with your dog at work. But the serious objective is to show non-dog owners how having a dog enhances your life and hopefully inspire them to adopt one of the many dogs waiting in shelters.
Have you ever wished you could really communicate with your dog?
Do you mean along the lines of, could you please wipe your feet before you walk on the carpet?
Not quite, but dog handlers in the Avon and Somerset Police Force have recently found themselves wishing they can. The force has imported several dogs in from Holland. And of course, the dogs only respond to commands in Dutch. The officers handling the dogs have had to learn the necessary Dutch phrases to instruct the dogs, and apparently dogs and handlers are progressing well.
Well, they should be thankful they don't have to bark at their dogs. How much dog first aid do you know?
Well, I don't think I could put our dog's paw in a sling, if that's what you mean.
Exactly. If, like most of us, the answer is not much, maybe we should all start learning some. One owner's prompt treatment saved his dog's life. Dave Carley and his dog Jack, a Weimaraner, were out for a walk in Vail, Colorado, when Jack spotted some spare baseballs on the floor. Jack tried to pick up several balls in one go, and one went down his throat, blocking his airway. Jack could not breathe and was in real danger. Luckily, owner Dave is a doctor, and having reached down Jack's throat and pulled the ball out of the way, he performed CPR on his dog. Dave's quick action saved his dog's life, and today Jack is alive and well, although probably no longer a baseball fan.
I guess you could say his experience was extremely valuable. And talking of the value of experience, the final word goes to a Tasmanian farmer who recently shelled out for a sheepdog. The dog, Begala Mick, cost $5,400 and is allegedly the most expensive sheepdog in the world, beating the old record by $400. According to Mick's breeder, it is money well spent, though, as the 20-month-old dog is so experienced that he is ready to go straight to work keeping the sheep in order.
And on the subject of rounding up, that just about rounds it up from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
The one best place to bury a good dog is in the heart of his master. Ben Hur Lampman. The Blue Cross charity has a scheme to help educate children about responsible pet ownership. We spoke to dog behaviourist and trainer Delia Graham about the scheme and the history of the Blue Cross.
I'm talking to Delia Graham, who deals with behaviour problems and dog training, and she's become involved with the Blue Cross with an educational programme for children. Delia, first of all, could you tell us about the Blue Cross?
Yes, of course. The Blue Cross is an animal charity involved in their welfare. It was founded well over 100 years ago and was originally known as our Dumb Friends League. At the beginning of the last century, it was involved mostly in helping horses. And those of you that have read the book Black Beauty by Anna Saw will have some understanding of the difficult conditions that horses experience during those times. Mm. So they set up a scheme for large horses to be stationed at steep hills in London to help the other horses lift up or bring up the heavy loads that they were pulling. And this scheme continued up until just before the Second World War. The charity also has several hospitals. The first one was opened at the beginning of the last century, 1906 time. In 1912, the Blue Cross was set up as part of the our Dumb Friends League, specifically to help horses in the Balkan War. The site of a horse casualty was marked with a Blue Cross, so hence the name of the Blue Cross charity itself, and it started as part of our Dumb Friends League. During the First World War, our Dumb Friends League set up hospitals in France to help injured horses and dogs, and of course those that were suffering from diseases. Mm. They treated an enormous number of pets, and almost all the animals were gravely injured and burned, and of course they had injuries as the soldiers did from gas exposure. Mm. Between the two world wars, London City had a massive slum clearance program in place, and of course people had to leave their homes, so the new homes didn't allow animals to live in them, a lot of people had to abandon their pets, and the charity helped look after them and rehome them. Then moving on to the Second World War, the League then helped the pets of people who were away because of the war, and also for those that were injured. And after the war, it quarantined dogs returning from abroad. Some soldiers brought pets back from where they had been. Oh. And Blue Cross medals were awarded to animals that had saved lives of people during the war as well. Since then, it's instigated several other little programs, national children dog shows, the horse protection scheme set up to buy horses no longer needed because vehicles were taking over their jobs. And in 1950, our Dumb Friends League officially became known as the Blue Cross. And since then, the charity has developed 11 adoption centres. There are two equine rehabilitation centres, and there's another one opening shortly in Derbyshire, not far from where I live. And there are four veterinary hospitals. And currently, the figures are that they rehome approximately 6,000 animals a year.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. And you've become involved with one of their educational programmes for children.
That's right, yes. This is really aimed at educating the next generation of pet owners. Just really about getting the message out there that about responsible pet ownership, thinking about the kind of issues that really need consideration before the fluffy pet is brought home, and also keeping safe around the animals are the two main things that we do.
So it's a combination of sort of classroom work and a visit involving animals?
Well, it depends upon the group and what they want. You can do a one-off visit, which a lot of schools like. You do where you take an assembly. Mm. With a smaller group, the brownies and so on, then yes, it's a mixture of both where you go in, you're talking, and the children are interacting with what you're doing, they're taking part in what we're doing. But in addition to that, Blue Cross has put together a five-week program where a volunteer goes in on the first week and takes part in the class and the presentation, and then leaves the next 3 weeks or work to the teacher. Mm-hmm. And then the final week, the volunteer goes back in again and sort of summarises the whole thing and brings it all to an end. So, it does vary, really, with what those schools actually want.
Yeah, yeah. And you've actually been in with your dog?
Oh, yes.
How did he take to that?
Well, my older dog has already been experienced with this kind of thing. She's been a pat dog, and she also did the same kind of work with Pro Dogs before the charity folded. So she's very at home with it. That's Minty. She's 8 years old. My younger dog, Todd, who's four, he hadn't done anything like this before, and I just thought, well, I'll get him involved in this as well, because if you are doing this with a dog, which you don't have to do, you don't have to have a pet at all, but if you are taking the dog in, and it is, of course, temperament tested. So Todd, I knew, had a suitable temperament, so I took him in for his first assembly, and he was kind of, there's a lot of people here. I'm a little bit anxious, but not really worried. And the second time he went in, he just lay down on the floor and just did what he needed to do when he was asked to. So, you know, taking your dogs in is fantastic because it really focuses the children. However, it can also focus them too much. They're thinking about what the dog is doing rather than what you're saying. So it is nice to have a dog that will just lay down nice and still when they need to do. So that you can get the message across. And of course, the important part of taking your dog into these kind of situations is that you are able to read your dog's body language and understand whether they are worried or whether things are all too much for them. The temperament test obviously gives a good indication of how they are, but nothing is quite like, you know, the real thing. At Crufts this year, Blue Cross asked the volunteers to put their dogs onto the stand, which worked really well, apparently. There's been a lot of positive feedback and a lot of interest in people offering to be volunteers because of the dogs being on the stand.
Oh, excellent.
But what was noticeable in an extremely stressful environment for dogs was that the Blue Cross dogs were not distressed by the situation. And I think that's due to the, you know, the careful temperament testing, and also the part of what you do is also being made aware of signs of stress in your dog so that you can do something about it.
Read their feedback and see how they're feeling. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, for the children listening, what would you like to say to them? The message of responsible pet ownership.
Okay, well, the message of responsible pet ownership is, of course, not the fact that it's a nice little fluffy thing that you want to live with and you want to cuddle and so on, but to really think about the needs of your pet, whether it's a dog, whether it's a mouse, whether it's a rabbit or a cat or a horse. The first thing you need to consider is what you know about that pet. It's really important you understand their needs, and that, you know, keeping a rabbit in a little box and not allowing it out is not the best thing for a rabbit, for example. So the key thing, first of all, is to find out about your pet. Do some research. Possibly talk to somebody who already owns a pet, a similar pet, or the same kind of pet. The other thing also is to consider whether you have enough time to look after your pet. They need feeding, they need watering, they need cleaning out if they're kept in a little house. If you're thinking about a dog or a horse, then they need exercise. And they also need contact. They're social animals. They like to talk to other members of their species, but if they can't get them, then we have to do it. So time is really, really important. The other thing also is money. It shouldn't be, but it is, because it does cost money to feed them, of course. But there are all the other things that tie in with that. If your pet needs to be vaccinated against catching diseases, if they need an operation, a lot of pets are neutered. And so that costs, you know, over £100 for most pets. If the pet is poorly, worming tablets, grooming implements, it can go on and on and on, brushes and combs and so on. And, of course, toys, which we all like to buy for our pets. So there are lots and lots of things to consider. And the fact that in amongst these sort of four main points, and the last one is space. Have your pet having enough space, which I already mentioned. Rabbits quite often living in little hutches that are far too small for them. Sometimes people have really big dogs in small flats. However, if they give that dog lots of exercise and take it out, then for that, those people, that particular thing isn't an issue. So the four main points really are knowing about the pet that you want, making sure you've got the time and space for that pet, appropriate amount of space, and of course, having enough money if things go wrong. However, that said, there are charities like Blue Cross that are able to help people that do have trouble with paying for their vet bills, but really are very good pet owners.
Yeah. So it's putting the thought in.
And having
a plan B.
Yeah, and it's not just going out there and saying, "Oh, well, I like that. Can I have one of those?" kind of thing. You know, it is a big responsibility. And you know, pets don't live for weeks; they live for years if you're lucky. And with something like a dog or a cat, it can be 18 years, and that's a big commitment.
I think as well, it doesn't matter whether it's a hamster, a gerbil, a rabbit, a cat, or a dog, or a horse, whatever. You the amount of effort you put in with them, you know, and the time you spend with them is what you get back from them, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's so rewarding.
Yeah.
That you can't put a price on it, really, which is where I think, you know, if people have got a financial problem, the charities like Blue Cross are fantastic to help those kind of people.
Yeah. Well, then, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye. To find out more about the Blue Cross or their educational scheme, check out their website. There's a link on the Dogcast site.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Dog ownership. The what have I done moment. Written by Julie Hill. Read by Julie Hill. Where dog ownership occurs, there inevitably follows a panic-stricken, what-have-I-done moment. This is the moment when it dawns on you that you have voluntarily brought into your life a demanding creature who has pressing needs and acknowledges no rules or boundaries. This is particularly true with first-time dog owners, and it is not to say that acquiring a dog is a negative experience. It is, however, a responsibility that nothing else prepares you for. When you have a child, on arrival they are fairly innocuous. Sure, they may deafen you with their cries, but for the first few months they are fairly controllable. By comparison, a puppy enters your life in an advanced state of physical development and perfectly adequately equipped to wreak havoc in your life and home. As your cute little puppy scampers into your abode, he glances around him with interest. He might sit on his sweet little puppy butt and scratch his darling little ears. This is puppy body language for, "I am stalling for time while I plan my first attack." I have never read this in any published guide to canine communication, but from my extensive field studies, I can assure you this is how to interpret such behaviour. This is borne out by the fact that the puppy's next move will be to chew something, scratch something, or mark something in the time-honoured doggy way. The something in question will depend on what is closest to hand, but it is sure to be a treasured possession. You will rescue your by now damaged and soggy belonging, or clean up whatever bodily fluid, or solid, the puppy has produced. The pup, in his turn, will watch. He may well caper about beside you. And he has discovered a fundamental truth of his universe. For every action of his, there is a reaction of yours. And from his point of view, it's really fun. Now he will try another activity. You will deal with the ensuing situation, and the pattern will repeat until he runs out of energy and falls asleep wherever the mood takes him. This will almost always be in the most awkward location possible, obliging you to step carefully over him while he snoozes, regaining the energy for later fun and games. You may not have reached your what-have-I-done point, because puppies are cute, and it's possible to forgive them most misdemeanours. However, the acid test is often the first night spent with a new puppy. Your new companion has been ripped from the bosom of his family, which was a particularly cosy place to sleep.
He is not happy about it, and has no qualms about expressing his unhappiness. He will, in all probability, cry and howl and make the whole range of sad, endearing noises at a pup's disposal. This is the time many owners' nerves fail them. The puppy is allowed into the bedroom, never to be ousted again, and they will definitely have reached the what-have-I-done point. The next morning will be no better, as, odds are, the puppy will have produced all manner of yucky, smelly liquids and semi-solids in the night, in which he will have at least trodden, if not rolled, with evident relish. Toilet training was my own Waterloo. Although I had waited to get a dog of my own for years, after days shadowing my puppy, armed with a clean-up spray and cloth, I was a broken woman. What have I done? Was my plaintive wail as I fell to my knees, probably straight into a freshly left message. The good news is that the moment passes. The panic wears off, and the hard work and perseverance continues. Gradually, unperceivable to you, living through the process, your dog matures and learns. Then one day, the full realization of what you have done hits you. True, you have brought into your life a demanding creature who still has pressing needs, but he does now acknowledge rules and boundaries, even if he does not always obey them. More than this, though, you find beside you someone who will follow you wherever you go if you let him. He will never criticize. He will always be on your side, always ready for a game on a good day or a consoling lick on a sad one. You are at the center of his world, and all he asks in return is to be a small part of yours. So although all dog owners will experience at least a fleeting moment of panic, it passes, and the hard work of the puppy months become a distant and fond memory. Some of us even find ourselves ready to sign up for the experience again. I myself have been puppy broody recently. Surely the only thing better than one dog is two. I've made arrangements, visited a breeder, and plans are being made. This time I'll be prepared. I'm ready for the housebreaking, the training, the chewing, the scratching, the trips to the vet, the disturbed nights. Oh, no. What have I done?
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime. Hi, and welcome to puppy playtime. I went to Crufts earlier this year. I loved the little papillons. And I would have liked to have one of my own. However, when we researched the breed, I decided that it wouldn't be fair to bring such a delicate dog into a house where there is already a gorgeous but boisterous Labrador, and where we one day hope to have a greatest mountain dog too. Once the idea of me having a dog was discussed, we started researching other breeds. We decided a Bichon Frise met all our requirements, and we went to meet some. They were so cute, and we put a deposit down on a bitch puppy. Her name is Star, and she's coming to live with us in early July. I have thought very carefully about how I will socialise and train Star. I want to take her to puppy classes so she learns to behave well with other dogs, and then on to obedience classes. I am looking forward to taking her to the Wag and Bone Show, which will be one of her first outings after she has had her injections. I am planning to enter her in the prettiest bitch competition. Toilet training is always important with a puppy, and I am determined that I will be the one to help Star realise what is required of her, and I will clean up any accidents that might happen. I realise that I am very lucky to be able to have a dog of my own, and I hope that I will also be lucky enough to have Star with me for many years. If you would like to see photos of Star, check out the Dogcast Radio website. If you have a young puppy or are going to have a puppy, contact me with your advice, problems or funny stories. Have fun with your dog and make sure your dog has fun with you.
We had some responses to our feature on allergies last time. This one is from Corianne Olson. She says, "Hi Julie, I have allergies to all animals and all of nature. I love hiking, and I have a black Labrador and an English foxhound. Since I refuse to live in a bubble or get rid of my beloved dogs, I've made the commitment to immunotherapy, and it has been truly wonderful. It is basically injecting pure forms of the allergens that you specifically are allergic to in small amounts at first, and then increasing over time until you are desensitized. I even sleep with my dogs. I bathe them every couple of weeks and brush them often, and I don't have any problems. I tell people that I would have to also get rid of my daughter, since I'm allergic to her if she's been outside rolling round in the grass. Immunotherapy is another wonderful way to help people with allergies. Thank you, and I love your show. Great job. Well, thanks, Corianne, and I hope you continue to enjoy the show. Now, as you heard from Jenny in Puppy Playtime, we'll be coming to you next time under the influence of a puppy. So bear us in mind and fingers crossed. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you call a dog that finds everybody? A Dalmatian.